It's time for the Cheap and Chad's Power Half Hour. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back to the best and only podcast that features our league of record. Tonight, I'm joined by none other than, you know him, you hate him, Matt Gelchin. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chaz. I'm a little bit disappointed that that first take of the intro might be cut out of the podcast. That was the enthusiasm build, and then to identify yourself mistakenly as the chief was
I'll cut it in like an outtake, and maybe one day, because I have all the recordings and there are a few outtakes, so maybe one day I'll put together like an outtakes and throw that out there for people to listen. Because for people who don't know, we don't just come on and automatically record. We come on, we figure out what we're doing, and then we kind of so there's plenty of like talking outside of like the official recording, so there's plenty of stuff that we just not official.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that's not a foreshadowing of how you're well who am I kidding? I hope that's a foreshadowing of how your fantasy season will.
Probably. Who knows? I mean, I haven't nailed down my strategy yet. So until I do, no, there's really no telling what's going to happen. I mean, I'm going to have a set strategy going into the draft. I'll execute it no matter what. It's just a matter of what I'm going to choose. Clearly, I had not really thought through my strategy last year to the full. And it's not a strategy I'm willing to do this year. With all the freaking running backs talking about holding out for better contract, I'm not willing to take that risk again. So, you know, guys like Zeke, Gordon, those guys are all off the table automatically for me. So,
wow. We've got a list of things to talk about, but that's actually the one thing that I've been dying to know about your draft strategy last year, which was, when did you actually make the decision, like 100%, I am committing to this three running back strategy? Was that something that was a week before? Was it the day of?
No.
Good
question. I was committed to that strategy pretty much from the beginning of the summer. It was really just about what running backs was I going to go after and how much was I going to spend. I knew that if I spent the top dollar for basically the top running backs, I would basically most of my budget. So with the guys I ended up getting, you know, I ended up spending like $180, $185 somewhere in there, which is basically the most I could spend, which would only be basically no more than like $1.10 for the rest of the positions. I had a backup plan if those first early guys went too high and like I wouldn't be able to do it. My backup plan was actually to go after McCaffrey, Gordon, and Saquon. And had that happened, I would have gotten all three of those guys for cheaper, and I would have performed a hell of a lot better. So,
that's a team with some horses, correct. There. Talking about the bus to the stadium, man, you got the horses in the back.
Yeah,
right,
I mean,
there.
So yeah, I settled on the strategy because when I was doing my deep dives with data, one of the things I always look at is I have a running analysis over the past few years of seasons and the call players and the points they've produced. And basically I break it down into a cost per point accrued. And I consistently found that top running backs produce most points for the lowest amount of money spent. Even though you're spending $65 in some games, if they're scoring in over 300 points, they highest point per the point per dollar value basically.
Wait. Like, but how's that could work with quarterbacks have been going for like $5, but they're scoring even 200 points.
Sure.
That's 40. Yeah, $40.
I'm like talking about position players because I knew that for quarterback, I could basically grab anybody for fairly cheap and they'll produce for me. What it came down to, I think I may have when right after the draft happened last year, that I looked at it and I said, okay, my goal is to get to 106 points per week, because on average when you do that, it's going to give you the highest, it's going to give you like a 70% win rate, which is enough to get you into playoffs. And then really all it matters is, you know, can you catch fire in playoffs and get lucky guys hot. So for me, it was about what do I need to get to make playoffs? And it was, this is how many points I need to score. This is how many points that these running backs will do. If I plug in like a random QB, if I do even baseline wide receivers at $1, as between, it was like between the QB, the wide receivers, the tight end, and the flex, as long as I scored like 40 points, 40 to 50 points a game, I was confident that I could make up the rest of it in the running backs, in those three, with the three running backs, and didn't really work out.
I'll give you a ton of credit here, because the fact that you determined at the beginning of the summer that you were going to go that route, and then to not try to play any games on this podcast, you were then sharing your hypothesis that to win a title, you need a top eight running back. To win a title, you need a top eight running back, which very well, even if it's sinking in subconsciously, probably had the effect of inflating running back prices, which makes it more difficult for you to then execute this strategy of drafting these top running backs. So kudos to you for not having your strategy inform what you're trying to share.
No, I appreciate that. You know, it one of my goals when I first approached Chief about doing this podcast was that we wanted to be informative. We wanted to, provide what we thought was good value in terms of the information we're sharing, but also that we wouldn't hold stuff back for ourselves. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to share my strategy, right, of how I'm going to draft, but mm-hmm. for everything else was on limits, right? I'm not going to intentionally say something or not say something because it affects the way I plan on drafting to try and gain an edge over everybody else. You know, the way I look at our league is we're all really well informed. Sometimes some people are better informed than others. Sometimes some years, some people do more draft prep than others. For the most part, we're a very competitive league. And I think that there's a lot of pride the individual winners each season can take, because they're beating a handful of people who are, you know, 10 other people that are very much that are good fantasy players, right? Like when I compare our league to my family league, mm-hmm. right? There's high end in the my family league people, and then don't care who are taking defenses and kickers in like round 6 and 7 versus this league. So it was more about just getting information out there that we thought everybody would like. I didn't mind sharing my resources and stuff like that, because at the end of the day, it makes the league better. And if I can't beat people who are better, then I don't deserve to win. So that was kind of the whole take with doing it. And that's why, you know, I never strayed away from sharing information that I thought was relevant. As long as I wasn't giving away my personal strategy, everything else was, you know, on the table.
Yeah. All right. So one final question on this. What was your excitement level like? What were you feeling as the draft unfolded and that you were finally getting to execute this strategy? Because some people had thrown out this idea, maybe someone will be so bold as to draft two top running backs, which would have been pretty, I don't know, maybe unprecedented would be a little bit strong, but it definitely would have been bold or ambitious. And then knowing that you're going to do one better than that, and then people kind of putting together this as it's unfolding, what was going through your mind?
Kat can attest to this. She was in the room when it was happening, and I was saying, I can't believe this is working. I can't believe I'm getting away. I'm going to get for me to get the basically three of the top four running backs, at least what we thought were three of the top four running backs at prices that I was comfortable paying. And part of the strategy was predicated on players going early in the draft, because one of the things I've found over the years is that people tier players in each position, right? So you have your X number of top players. So you have like your top three, the next four, people tier them, right? Tier one, tier two, tier three. And typically what happens is that there's a general consensus about who the players are in each tier. Sometimes some people might have like one person in a tier above or a tier below, but for the most part, everyone more or less knows who are the right people, right? And so what ends up happening is people tend to overbid the last player in their theoretical tiers to try and get that tier player. So it earlier players, if you're going to bid on somebody, it's better to bid on them in the early part of the tier, like, right, if they're the first or second out of four, because those are theoretically going to come at a better price value than the last guys in the tier.
Yep. No, absolutely.
That was basically the strategy I was taking, was that I want to try and get these guys early. I was assuming that at least a few of them would come up. And then if they did, as long as I could get the first guy for like $60, which I think I got, one of the guys I got for $60, as long as I could do that, then I would be able to, I should have been able to hit all my numbers. I was kind of hoping that, I think it was DJ or Bell, one of them would go for 58, 59. So I'd have a little more wiggle room on the rest. But I kind of knew that I was going to be spending $183, $185 on those three players. And I just, it just had to happen at the right time. Otherwise, I would have fallen back to, you know, the fallback guys, which would have, again, been better for me. I wouldn't be surprised this year if you try, given the boldness of the strategy, I wouldn't be surprised this year if you see somebody try and go for top two. I wouldn't be surprised if someone tried to take Barkley and Kamara or Barkley and McCaffrey, try and take top three or four. And hell, it might even be me. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Because I actually have not finalized my strategy for this year. So
that, that almost happened last year, anyway, where you had you taking three of the top guys and Joe O'Brien and I got into a bidding war on Melvin Gordon,
which bid his price way up.
And yeah, and I mean, it was the case. He very well could have, if I had stopped bidding, he would have gotten Gordon for 59, and so would have essentially had the kind of a similar position, which would have. So it's not. Yeah, I agree. It's not out of the question that someone perhaps goes the route of drafting two top running backs.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen three top wide receivers, right? I took that strategy for a couple of years, trying to draft three of the top like five to six wide receivers, which tend to be a little bit cheaper in general anyway, you know, in the $50 range. It's really just, I think it's year to year on the sentiment. What ends up happening because of previous years, right? Like 2 years ago, a lot of running backs got hurt, right? So you naturally see an ebb and flow towards people preferring wide receivers to people preferring running backs. Last year, I thought you would see people preferring wide receivers, which was also part of the reason why I decided to go after running backs, because I knew that there were all these new sort of high-end wide receivers that were going to be flooding at the top of the market. Juju, Thielen, and those were all guys that I had sort of hit on the year before. One thing that I've actually realized in my own drafts is that I'm frequently in on players that break out the year before they break out. So not great. I'm always a year too early, apparently. So if you guys want to know who's going to pop out this year, just look at my draft last year, right? You had Lockett, you had Godwin, right? Those are all guys that are blowing up for this year. So it's funny how that works, but there's a whole new crop of players this year that I'm excited about that are in all sort of tiers and prices. So hopefully it'll be a better mix for me to try and grab, assuming I don't do something stupid and try and grab three top running backs again. In which case, I don't think I'd be surprised if I try that again, but I don't think anybody else but me would do it. I don't think anybody else but me is bold/stupid enough to do it again.
No, I think, I think that's one thing that's been consistent about your draft strategy, is that you will take the route of doing something that no one else would do. Like the three top wide receivers was not something that others were attempting. The three running backs, if it were possible to start three tight ends, I have no doubt that we'd have a team of Kittle, Ertz, and Kelsey on Team Chaz.
I mean, I don't know, your brother or is it Jay, who's the one that always takes two tight ends? That person probably would have done it. They would take all three.
Yeah, Ryan. Ryan historically was big on the two tight end lineup. A lot of times with kind of a Gronk Olsen combination. Lot to unfold in these next 30 days or so, presuming that we draft at some point in that time.
I mean, what are your thoughts in terms of strategies that we might see this year? What are, you know, I took obviously the crazy strategy last year what are some other strategies that you've thought of that you wouldn't necessarily take, but that are potentially out there? Because I got a couple of them for me that I've thought about, but I've never actually really seriously considered doing.
Yeah, so I don't anticipate that anyone will go this route, but I think it would be fascinating if someone went the route of Mahomes, who would not surprise me, depending on where he gets at a pretty decent value. Mm-hmm. If someone went Mahomes, Kelsey, Hill, Williams, I don't see that happening. But if you look at each of those players and just based on their value, mm-hmm. Mahomes, typically recently we've had quarterbacks undervalued. Someone could say, wow, Mahomes, he's a potential week winner. And I can get him for 20, 25 mm-hmm. bucks. Yeah, I'll nab him. Typically top tight ends don't go nearly as high as they normally would, as what they're listed. And I'll break some news here. And with Ryan out of the league this year, tight end. Yeah. So I think he's probably going to, by the time this podcast goes up, I think he's planning on sending a text to the group chat. I think, letting everyone know. I talked to him this weekend and confirmed, we will be down one Gelchin, in the fantasy league this year. And, so yeah, little Adam Schefter breaking news, breaking the podcast. I think what happened was just there with some stuff going on with work, and they were in the process of just moved to a new place in Chicago and trying to figure out long-term where they're going to be. And then I think just then managing fantasy leagues with his group of college friends, and where he just felt that he often wasn't able to dedicate the amount of time that he probably would have liked to to this league. And so
are we talking like a 1 year hiatus for him while he gets kind of things situated, or is he
that's a good so that's where I think when he was sharing this, I didn't ask, and I think part he didn't want to presume that he would necessarily have a spot back. Like, I don't think he wanted to come across and say, oh, well, like, I can take a break, because we, with the exception of maybe one or two people, I guess Drew or C-Mal, we've had a pretty consistent group in the league. And so I don't think he wanted, I think he just probably would have felt uncomfortable saying, like, well, I expect that people would say that I haven't been back. And so he just, I think, and that, honestly, it's just for his mind was kind of like, for this year, it just wasn't going to make sense. But so potential impact on tight end prices when you have one of the biggest bidders.
I mean, now I'm definitely going to end up with Kittle or Kelsey and Ertz, or Ertz and Kittle. So now that I want to bid somebody for him, it's going to happen.
But then you think about Hill, just from a strict auction value, then who knows, maybe, I don't know if there will be a vote on his eligibility or not, but there are people who I know are just going to say, you know what, I'm just not submitting a bid for him.
Absolutely. I get it.
And so there's a receiver who, in terms of value, like his production value is probably going to be somewhere in that $43 to $50 range. And then especially if he pops a kick return or two,
yep, he's worth it.
But he could very well go. And then, Damian Williams too is another guy who people say, like, you know what, I'll draft. And so, like, I think people will fear the possibility of having so much talent concentrated on one team. But if you just look at those four individual players, each of them have the potential, I think, to go at what most would consider a reasonable rate, potentially even being categorized as a steal.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I've actually contemplated that strategy before, saying, like, is there a whole team's worth of people that you can get, right? So, I mean, the obvious ones in previous years was Steve and Ben and Antonio and Bell, and even last year, Juju. You know, last year you could have done it if you had done it with the Rams, if you had taken all three wide receivers and Gurley and Goff, you would have been one of the highest point scorers, and you would have been able to, you could afford all those players because they didn't go for what they're going to go for this year. I think the, at least my problem with strategy is that I'm perfectly a fan of stacking, right? Quarterback and tight end, quarterback and wide receiver, less to a degree, quarterback and running back. My problem with that is inherently when you put all that, all those eggs in one basket, not only are you subject to that team potentially dropping a Duke in one game and therefore you're out of luck, but also on any given play, you can only have two of those. Let's say you were taking players for the Chiefs. You can really only potentially have two of those four players scoring a touchdown, right? So you're actually giving up opportunity to the other two, whether it's Kelce or Williams or Hill, or even all three if Mahomes runs it in himself, that they all of a sudden the opportunity cost for them to score a touchdown is now diminished because you have so many eggs in one basket. That's inherently a problem with going that route. I wouldn't be surprised if someone tries it. It's a risky gambit, and yeah, if the team has a bad week, you're probably going to end up losing your matchup that week. You know, round robin style, or you know, it's all based on points. I think that strategy is more valid. It's just I have a hard time believing anybody's willing to do even quarterback, running back, wide receiver, just because there's so much.
I agree.
At risk there.
Yeah, and that's where I don't foresee someone doing it, but I think just it's based on drafting value at different positions. Like those are four players who very well could be values when we look back on the auction prices post draft.
Yeah, that's very fair. I'm curious. You know, I'm curious now that Hill's been cleared and he should be playing. And I'm curious. You know, and we'll never know. I'm curious what kind of value has changed. Whereas before, you know, he was, you know, had Hill been suspended for the year, I would have gone after Kelce hard and paid a lot for mm-hmm. him, knowing that there was all those targets and all those opportunities that have opened up. But now that he's there, you know, it's basically, I think, you know, that they should produce similarly to what they did last year. I would expect a negative regression for a guy like Mahomes, being that it's his second year. Now that people on him and what he's going to do, I expect there to be a regression for that whole team in terms of scoring offense. Same with the Rams. So, you know, now that people have time to play system, I think if people are going to try and grab players, you know, I'm interested to see where the Cardinals go this year. You know, Kyler, David Johnson, Larry Fitz, who I think will go for more because of the air raid offense and the newness of it, and people don't really have film on it from a point. And so I think they could be a candidate to be a surprise.
Yeah. What's a strategy that you've seen out there has been running through your mind? Not necessarily that you would employ, but that you're curious to see if someone might go.
I've always wanted to see somebody draft every player from the same bye week. You know, basically concede, I'm going to throw this one week, but then I have essentially my starters the rest of the every other week. I've always been curious to see that. I've considered it every so often, but every year I look at the bye weeks, and because of the stupid way the NFL does bye weeks, there's only like two or three weeks that you really conceivably could do it, because most bye weeks only have two or four teams. There's only like one bye week each year that has like six teams. That's a little bit better. But every year it's been like half those teams have been shitty teams that I don't want really any parts of their offense. So I really want to see someone do that. I think there's a lot of inherent risk there. But it'd be a ballsy to be like, I'm going to throw this, but then I have my stars every other week, which I would, you know, at least in my view, it gives you a positional advantage over every other team except one team that you're playing that one week, you know?
Yeah, that would be interesting. I think where people would run into challenges is in the drafting itself. If they're beholden to that, and they're drafting players more so because I want to implement this strategy and not because I think this player is worth it. And they're paying an extra buck here, an extra $2 there. And then that kind of the back end of that roster ends up being compromised because they're getting nickeled and dimed to implement the strategy. But if anyone were to, yeah, I think that's one of those ones that I'd put in the category, a Chaz only strategy. I don't see anyone else in the league doing it. Perhaps because no one has the fantasy cojones that you quite have.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I already looked at the bye weeks for this year, and there's only like 2 weeks that I would even consider with the teams that I like. And so I put it at like a solid 5% chance that I would do it this year.
Okay.
That's the percentage chance that I end up doing it. Right now I have a leading one that's like a probably what I'll end up going with unless something else changes my mind. I've got basically two or three that I'm working on. One of the things that I've changed in my draft strategy over the past few years is over the past few years I would cap players and then I would say like I want one or two of like this group, right? Which I think a lot of people do. And I've not been happy with my teams because what ends up happening is I end up chickening out because I feel like the price is too high in the player, and then I am not getting the mix of players that I want. So over the past few years, I've switched to basically honing in on like 3 to 5 that I absolutely want, and I'm going to take them no matter what their price is, and I'll figure the rest out. So I'm still – that's kind of my process now, but that part of that's informed by what my is. So I have to kind of see what's going to take the lead. Is it the players or is it the strategy? Last year it was the strategy, and that dictated, you know, the 3 of the 4 players I was going to get. But I don't know about this year. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we've been talking a lot about draft stuff. You know, you brought this up when we were talking about doing this episode that this is a big, right? This is the 10th anniversary. This is the last chance to get your name on the trophy on the front because you'll be relegated to the side and therefore not as important.
Yeah, it's wild to think that this is the 10th year of the auction league. I mean, I remember exactly where I was sitting when we did the draft the first year. I remember exactly where I was sitting where I read when I read Hino's post-draft recap, and as Hino is so adept at doing, kind of just throwing a little jabber to it, me knowing that I would respond forcefully that he would get my goat, and like to think that we're 10 years later. I mean, then those memories are still so vivid in my mind. It's wild to think that that much time has passed, but this is big. I love the image, and I think it may have been Joe who shared something with me when we were chatting on the phone a couple weeks or last week. Just like this is, if you think about that trophy and being able to have as a benchmark of success, having your name on each side over the course of these next couple of decades, that would be a pretty cool accomplishment.
Yeah, and then eventually we'll have to go up to a second tier trophy like the Stanley Cup. So
Oh man.
That could be cool. I mean, I agree. I think we've obviously all matured not only in our own lives, but I think we've all matured so much from a fantasy standpoint in terms of strategy and the way we go about doing things. I mean, you and I have the list in front of us here. The biggest thing that stands out is the prices for quarterbacks has just dropped. Right. I mean, Peyton Manning went for $26. Tony Romo, $18. Hell, even went for $9. You know, Aaron Rodgers was $43. The most we spent on a quarterback last year was $18, I think. So, I mean, it's just crazy how much we've dropped, which I think is more the overall quality of the number of quarterbacks in the league that you can trust because the league is opened up so much more in terms of throwing. You know, Drew Brees went for $39 because he was passing for like 4,000 yards. Now you've got 10 quarterbacks that do that every year.
Yeah.
So that's a huge thing that stands out to me. It's funny when you look at some of the people that are still in the league. Darren Sproles, when he was with San Diego, went for $4, and he's still in the league. Like, it's amazing that a player who is not a quarterback was drafted 10 years ago and is still in the league this year.
If anyone
Greg
ever
Olson, a dollar.
If they want a blast from the past and just seeing some names where it's like, holy cow. I mean, you go through some of these old drafts and you see players' names like, man, I have not thought about that guy in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Long time. It's it's been fun looking back. I've been scrolling through some of these. I think one of the other things that's interesting, certainly the 2010 draft, quarterback prices were so much higher. The other observation is that the prices on wide receivers has gone up. With the exception, so the first year there was one wide receiver who was drafted for a lucrative amount. That was Andre Johnson at 48. The number two receiver went for 38, and that's kind of humorous. It was Miles Austin. But then you start looking at some of these other receivers too, and you've
got Calvin Johnson for 29.
Calvin Johnson for $29. You've got a lot of people settling around that 30 range because you had Fitz going for 31. You had Roddy White. Steve Smith was at 25. Brandon Marshall, 29. Like, we were kind of had this, I guess, ceiling, at least in many of our minds, of what a receiver mm-hmm. should cost, and thinking, oh, well, there are three starting receivers and a flex, and so, I don't know, three times, if you're going to spend somewhere around $100, then I guess maybe my top guy should be 30-ish. And yeah, and so that's been the other thing. We're far more complex. I want to say it was 2016 was the first year where a receiver went for mm-hmm. over 50. And then that's kind of become a little bit – people are more comfortable – going up and up to snag one of those.
Now, let
those
me ask,
guys,
when it first started, because I can't remember that far back, was it half point PPR?
It's always been half point PPR.
That's interesting. Rob Gronkowski, a dollar.
Yeah, that was the year Rob Gronkowski the next year. Aaron Hernandez, mm-hmm. I remember it was another. Yeah, that was
someone drafted
actually,
both.
Sorry, the next year 2001 that would have been
someone drafted sorry, both of them, didn't they?
I remember
you
checked
had
that. Those. I
yeah.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So yeah, sorry. Yeah, so I had both Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. So it was my mind was going towards this next thing. Wait a minute. No, I must have picked up. Did I pick up Gronkowski off of waivers? I think
that must have been a different year because I mean he was here already like a rock star. I don't know whose team was. It doesn't say.
Yeah, so sorry, it was the following year where I had must have had Hernandez and Gronk because Heino drafted Gronk and then I believe dropped him. I picked him up and so I had Hernandez and Gronk on my roster at the same time and I was thinking, you know, it doesn't really make sense to have both Patriots starting tight end, and I traded Gronk away because I just felt there's a certain pride or attachment to the Hernandez draft pick because I was confident, oh, this is going to be a breakout guy, and finally one of these breakout guys I had ended up hitting, and so that kind of blinded me a little bit, and I think then ended up making a trade with Mancuso where I traded Gronk for AJ Green, and it worked out well for both of us. Probably better for Joe, but yeah, it was Heino drafted him for $1 the next year as well.
What's interesting looking at this is that your team only had one guy that you bid a dollar on, Javon Walker, who's a free agent, yeah. So maybe that was gonna be your drop guy. And I think it's Tim, also didn't bid on anybody that was a dollar. So it's interesting because most of the teams have two or three, maybe even five players of like a dollar. But there's a handful of teams that didn't spend. Your brother as well didn't spend a dollar on anybody. So it's just interesting. Yeah.
And actually, in the first year, I don't believe the drop policy was in effect.
Okay.
I think that's right on the money, and it's a good observation just how people become much more comfortable with the dollar bids. For me, I think what largely influenced my strategy at the beginning was I want to acquire as much trade capital as possible. I didn't expect, I'll have the best starting lineup to start the year, but if I draft enough good players on my bench, maybe one or two of them hit, all of a sudden I've got the ability to make a 2-for-1 offer that allows me to upgrade my starting lineup later on. But and I think that's probably where I've changed a little bit, as I've become less concerned, just as I haven't had as much success making trades. I haven't focused as much on storing away trade capital on my bench.
That makes sense. I mean, I think part of that is just the way that we do trades in our league is the trade market's changed even too. My general viewpoint is that my team is like giving up, which to a degree my team did that last year. You almost don't see anybody willing to trade. It's like trying to trade up for a stud is basically never going to work. You can always trade a stud away for depth. You can almost never try and trade up for a stud unless that team is just doing terribly. So I think that's one of the things, that strategy that's changed in our league, is that the way trades just work is that it's only in certain circumstances. It's rare that you see a trade now that works for both sides that isn't a trade of a...
Yeah, it's it'd be interesting. I haven't paid as close attention to all the trades, but there've been some real blockbuster trades the last couple of years with some major guys being on the move. And I feel like Hino's played has been a part in a couple of those. One thing, as I'm just looking at the prices real quick here, just wild seeing Joe Flacco going for $18. And here's a fun trivia question. If anyone can guess, how much did Joe Mancuso spend for Legadu Nane in 2010? The correct answer is $8. And Mr. Nene, it wasn't a year of peaks for him. He was kind of riding the valley that year. Had 23 receptions for 371 yards and a touchdown. So
nice.
But yeah, it's wild looking back like at some of these names. Like, holy cow, I've not thought about him in quite some time. Whereas I'm just looking at whose team was that? Oh yeah, looking at already like a rock star, Vasante Shenko. Haven't thought about him in a minute.
Yeah, I'm looking at playing the refs. Frank Gore went for $47.
Wow,
and he's still in the league. It's just there's like one team that's like someone who's still here. Adrian Peterson, 57, is still in the league. Let's see. Mike Wallace as of last year.
And it's even more impressive at the skill position. You kind of expect a quarterback where, okay, guys can take care of their bodies and play a little bit longer. When you see it, some of the skill positions, LeSean McCoy, he's still around. Yeah, and it's a fun stroll through memory lane.
Kevin Kolb went for $12. Yeah, it's definitely worth doing. Just go to the main ESPN page and then go to the 2010 and look at the draft recap. It's just crazy to look back and see how the things have changed.
Wow. Carell Nuck, if you Buckhalter, was a name I have not thought about him in a while. He went for $3 to Team LaBarge. It's unbelievable that we're 10 years in, and I think most would agree the league is stronger than ever.
Yeah, and so it's It's going to be an interesting year. I think a lot's going to be on the line, obviously, to take the last spot. I'm sorry, your brother go, whether it's a year or longer. I'm not sure where that leaves us, whether we – I don't know if Coop's in a position where he and Gates can split again. I think they probably still want a team together, which leaves us with the position of trying to find somebody. So whether that means we open back up to Drew or – I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on who could take that position?
So, I mean, I would I do have a I think it'd be interesting. I got the impression Gates and Gates and Coop would prefer to stay together this year, run Goop back. Maybe that was just because we were that, well, someone's gonna be partnered up. So who knows? Maybe that does change. But I think the most natural person to take on their own team would be Claire, if she were interested. If that was going to be, and I think it'd be fun to see TJC, the original TJC, each having their own squad. Wild card. So I'll throw out the wild card here. If that's something that Claire's would prefer to co-own with her boo. I think you got one John Thompson as a potential wild card, a way to, I know, have to overcome his track record more than a decade ago. He was not the best, but I know some I've talked about trying to reconnect with him and, so perhaps that would be a way to facilitate that. But yeah, that's kind of my initial thoughts. I think no matter how it shakes out, I think there's a lot of good storylines, and also just we'll have another fun dynamic added to the league this year.
Yeah. All right. You know, so we'll call it there. You know, generally I try and get this up and out in the same day, maybe 24 hours later. So I will wait until you make the announcement before I, or Ryan makes the announcement I drop this out, unless you want the announcement.
No, that's fine. I think Ryan, he had been planning on doing, I haven't chatted with him in the last 2 days. And I know he was planning on doing it, but I also, if something came up, I think it's fine. We can play it as a live. We will see what happens. If Mancuso, it was breaking news last time on the podcast.
So you felt like getting a matchup.
So it's that's a way to entice people to listen. As we're coming to the end here, any final thoughts from the Chaz?
Sorry, you broke up there. Any final.
Just any final thoughts? What are you thinking about as we approach as the calendar turns to August?
You know, I progressively each year since about 2016 has been spending less and less time draft prepping. I basically am. I do a little bit here and there, but like I'm aware that my number of hours spent on it has changed, and I've been trying to figure out if it's made me a better player or not. So I would just encourage people to think about, like, do they feel like they're, because the draft prep is important to them, and they feel like it makes them a better player. I'd be curious for people, other people's takes on whether or not they think that their draft prep really makes them a better player, or if it's more about the enjoyment they get out of, you know, in the preseason, you know, the July, August timeframe of like getting up for the new season, for Notre Dame, for whatever, you know, do they enjoy that time and just kind of hold their excitement level high rather than, you know, just being like, just waiting, watching that clock to, you know, hit the final draft day. I'd be curious if it's what it is for people.
Yeah, that's where I don't know that I have a great sense for how everyone approaches the draft, the strategy. Like if some people, it's like, oh, you know what, I won't start until preseason begins. Or for some people, it's like, just whenever it makes sense, whenever I feel like I have time. And I maybe I'm speaking from my own experience. Like, I don't think I have a set time in my head of like, hey, I'm going to begin draft prep at this juncture. It just so happened for me that I don't know. I saw something and it sparked, I was reading an article, and then the next thing you know, I was beginning to dive in a little bit. I'm trying to contain my excitement at this point, because I recognize it's a marathon, but it has been good getting refamiliarizing myself with some of the teams or some of the changes to with coaching staffs or roster turnover. Just I felt like at the end of last year, it was kind of a blur for me. So and I'm definitely excited to hopefully get a good draft strategy together that then I'm able to implement, which I feel like I haven't quite been able to do the last couple of seasons.
Well, I can promise you that whatever strategy I decide on, it will surprise the league. Hopefully I'll throw things in the chaos like I did last year. That's my end goal, is to basically make everybody throw out their own draft strategy as soon as possible and just have it be a free for all. So, with that, we'll sign off. Thanks so much for joining, Mr. Gelch. We'll see you next time on the Chief and Chaz, and maybe we'll have Chief next time. Who knows? We'll see you next time on the Chief and Chaz Power.
Yep. Appreciate it, Chaz. Great to join you.
All right. So long, guys.
See ya.